Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jed Lee, and this is Reading with Your Kids, coming to you with love from the historic neighborhood of Reedville, tucked into the southwest corner of beautiful Boston, Massachusetts. Our mission here is all about connection, connecting kids with books, families with each other, and communities through the power of story. Every week, we're joined by incredible authors and creators whose work lights up kids' lives. You can support our mission by spreading the word. Share the show with your friends. Give us a shout-out at school and let folks know that they can hear us on the WREB AM-FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Podcasts, Attic, Amazon Music, Audible, CastBox, Player FM. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. Two wonderful guests for you today. First up, Candace Jalili is here to celebrate her YA title, Seeing Stars. And later in the show, Amanda Just is here to celebrate Adventures in the Friendly Forest, her wonderful new devotional. Get ready, adventure fans. Toby Baxter is back. In I Heart River Home, the fourth thrilling book in the Adventures of Toby Baxter series, written by Tim Wright, 13-year-old Toby dives into his most unexpected quest yet. He's battling trolls, navigating the sandpit of love, and getting stuck with an L-O-V-E compass. But when the girl of his dreams, Rainy, is kidnapped, Toby must summon more courage than ever before. All four books in the Adventures of Toby Baxter series have been honored as Reading with Your Kids certified great reads, each packed with fast-paced action, humor, and heart. So grab your copy of I Heart River Home today and join Toby on an unforgettable journey through River Home, where every page is an adventure. Hey, I want to let you know that this episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Chicken Coop Chaos by Nancy Tavares. Are you ready for some barnyard fun your kids will absolutely adore? Then you've got to check out Nancy Tavares' delightful books, Chicken Coop Chaos and Chicken Coop Chaos Christmas. In the original Chicken Coop Chaos, we meet Pearl, a hen who loves peace, order, and a tidy little hen house. But when Window the Rooster barges in and decides he's not leaving, Pearl has to hatch a clever plan to take back her space. And let's just say things get hilariously chaotic. And just in time for the holidays, Chicken Coop Chaos Christmas brings even more laughs, heart, and festive feathered fun. These books are perfect for young readers, classrooms, and family read-aloud time. So flap on over to your favorite bookstore or online retailer and grab your copies of Chicken Coop Chaos and Chicken Coop Chaos Christmas today. Your kids will be clucking with joy. Join us right now from New York City. Our guest is here today to celebrate her new YA romance. It is called Seeing Stars. Please welcome to the show, Candace Jalili. Candace, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Delighted to have you on. I have to be upfront. I'm not a romance guy. I mean, I like being in love with my beautiful wife and everything, but if she would do a podcast, she would be the one, should be the one interviewing you about romance because she loves romance.
Oh, we got to get her on here. Maybe a guest appearance.
Yeah, well, it's going to take more than just me asking. I think explosives and crowbars and things like that. But so tell me about Seeing Stars. Who are we going to meet in this romance?
So Seeing Stars is a spinoff of my first YA debut, Finding Famous, and it focuses on Mona Mashad. She's kind of like this, I like to describe her as like a wild child Nepo baby reality star. And she finds herself in a love triangle with the president's son and her new friend slash surfing instructor.
Okay. I can see where there's some complications there that could lead to great stories.
Yeah, a very relatable predicament.
So where did the inspiration for these characters come from? Were you dreaming one day that you'd be dating the president's son, maybe?
I think the president's son of it all is probably very like that movie, My Date with the President's Daughter, was pretty big when I was growing up. So I think that probably came a little bit from there. And it felt like a fun way to kind of merge Mona's Hollywood world with like, what's something else that feels equally high stakes and public facing, but in such a vastly different way? And then the surfing instructor, I was actually, the surfing came from one of my like childhood best friends thought he should be a surfer. And I thought that was a good idea, but my editor had the idea of having the other guy in the love triangle be kind of just like a normal person, because in the first book, Finding Famous, we have this kind of like fish out of water situation with Josie, the main character, joining this mega famous reality TV family. And you get a lot of like humor and hijinks watching her be a fish out of water in that sense. And we thought this would be kind of like the reverse, having Mona, who's grown up in the spotlight, been famous since she was 4 years old, suddenly like going to a high school party in a garage. So that's kind of how that happened. Mona is kind of like an amalgamation of all of these different like pop culture celebrities who I've followed and had fascinations with since I was a kid up until now.
You want to spill the beans on any of those?
I'd love to, yeah. Credit where credit's due. She's, I think probably her original inspirations for me would be like Paris and Nicole during the Simple Life times. And then moving forward, I mean, any of the Mashad family members in these books are obviously slightly inspired by the Kardashian family in terms of like the reality TV dynasty of it all. And I think Mona would be most akin to like Kylie Jenner because she's the youngest one. But in terms of like her recklessness, probably, yeah, Nicole Richie at that time, early 2000s, Nicole Richie. Miley Cyrus, when she was kind of going through her bangers era, like wild child phase, definitely inspired her a lot. And a little bit of Kristen Cavallari from Laguna Beach when she was in high school.
I just don't get the whole reality TV thing. I mean, I do remember Paris and Nicole, and that was kind of a curiosity when it first came on. But I know my beautiful wife likes the housewives things, and I hear them when I'm in the other room, and I'm like, you're just listening to people argue with each other. I don't understand.
It's funny because it's like, I actually don't even, I watched them growing up, the housewives specifically, but I agree. I'm very conflict averse. So I get anxiety watching them fight on TV too. So I watch it less now. I think the Kardashians in particular, and what inspired me to do kind of like a familial show, are interesting to me, even though I actually don't even watch the show like that religiously or anything. I think what they've built is so one of one and interesting. Mm-hmm. Like to your point, like this was just kind of like, when Paris and Nicole's show was coming on the scene, it was like, oh, this is kind of interesting and different. But now it's like, they've built this, like, they're billionaires. And they have all these different, like, entities. And, like, to have that all start by, like, commodifying your personal life, I just thought was a really interesting concept to delve into. And I've always been fascinated by that. And, like, why are we so fat? Like, and what do they have to do to still feel relatable when their lives are becoming increasingly unrelatable? I think it's really interesting.
Uh-huh.
And just like this like concept of like the desperation of putting your life on the line to like get somewhere and be someone, that's become really commonplace now. It's like a template that people follow.
That's true. Do you think that that puts a lot of young people, a lot of pressure on young people, because they see this, the incredible wealth that some people have been able to generate because of, you know, being famous for being famous, and you know, oh, I need that, and that's what I need to do to get and attain that.
Mm-hmm. I think so, and I think like it's almost this false promise. I think when I was growing up, it was in school, we talk a lot about like the American dream and the false hope promise of the American dream sometimes. And I think that's kind of evolved into this of like, it seems like it would be really easy. Like it would be like this, like, oh, all I have to do is like be myself. And I think to a kid, it could really be that simple and that glamorous of just like, oh, I just like post some videos. And for them, it's even crazier, I think, for younger generations. You look at someone like the D'Amelio sisters, who became super famous, just like dancing on TikTok at their house during COVID. And then suddenly they're like superstars.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's this like tempting promise of like, well, why do I have to do math homework? I should just go in my room and record some videos. But that said, the next books I want to hopefully do are middle grade. So I've been talking to a lot of middle schoolers right now as preliminary research. And I've been really heartened by their lack of interest in social media.
Oh, great.
Yeah, they don't seem to care. They don't seem to be interested in it. They seem to be kind of like, if anything, the ones I've spoken to have been, if anything, kind of like, it's cringe.
Uh-huh.
Which I think is a good thing. I'm like, great, let's have it be cringe.
Yeah. You know, I, one of the things I notice is when you're talking about the Michaud family and seeing stars and the original Finding Famous, there's a real joy in your eyes and in your face. You really love these characters.
I really do. They feel like they're my imaginary friends it's such a weird experience writing a book and putting it out into the world, because it's like you create these people who you really have personal relationships with. You love them, these characters who you have, even like the ones who are maybe not the most likable characters, I still have like such soft spots for them. And I've spent so many years with them at this point, and I have such backstories on them, so many like factoids about them that aren't in either of the books. I adore them. I really do. They feel like real people to me.
Now, do you have like a collection of notebooks for each character with all those backstory facts and everything?
Yeah, I do. I have like, it's sitting right next to me right now. I've got my like, it's like a Lisa Frank notebook that I would have loved when I was in middle school. And I feel like it gets me in the zone of the type of writing I do. And I've got everything in there. I've got pages and pages and pages of documents on my laptop that are just like family history, like her personal thoughts about this, writing exercises of like what does their bedroom look like? What do they like? All of these like details of even like side characters. Like there's a security guard who I have a whole backstory on, and like what he does on the weekends when he's not working for the Michauds. Like all of these things are super probably like too well thought out.
Yeah. One of the things that I oftentimes ask an author is, you know, did your characters surprise you at all? But you seem to have such a great relationship with your characters. I'm wondering, have any of the characters ever disappointed you in any way? And if so, how?
That is such a good question. Yeah, I think sometimes, unfortunately, to make a book work, you need conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And you need things to go wrong. So I think it is really disappointing when you see the best in these people who you've created and you have. It's your fault you have to make them do things that you don't personally agree with, that you think are the wrong decision. And you're sitting there being like, oh, why would you do that? Like, oh God, this is a mess. Like Mona especially is a character like that, where you're like, ah, God, I can't watch what you're doing. But I have a soft spot for you. And in order for this to be a book and not just me wanting this to be like pleasant all the time, I need you to make some mistakes. And honestly, I think like that's a great part, something I love about this book, and I hope people take away from it, other than it just being like a fun escape. I think seeing an 18-year-old girl just make mistakes and make the wrong choice and do things that you're like disappointed in her for sometimes, and bounce back and have to deal with the consequences, is important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of, certainly myself, there are young people in my life that, you know, that are making decisions, and, you know, you just kind of have to sit back and go, I'll be here when that doesn't work out the way you think it's going to work out. I'm not going to judge you. You know, you're an adult now. You make your choice, but I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. I'm pregnant right now, expecting my first child, and I'm like mentally preparing myself for that. Like, you're just going to have to let him make mistakes at times. And that I think will be something that will be really hard for me.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
It will be very hard, but it's going to be very important, because one of the things we talked about, especially early on in the life of the podcast, is parents bubble wrapping their kids and you know, trying their best to make sure their kids don't experience any scrapes, bumps, disappointment, heartache. And not only is that not realistic, it's not healthy.
No, not at all.
We grow a lot from the bumps and bruises that we get over the years.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I heard a term recently that I really liked. It was on a podcast called Shameless. They were talking about exactly what we're talking about right now, and becoming parents and how they view parenting. And one of the hosts described how she was raised, and I really loved the phrasing of this, and I hope to do this. We'll see if I'm capable. But she called it almost like bouncy house parenting, where she feels like her parents created like a bouncy house for their kids, where it was like, you like play and be free and fall and trip, but like you're in this kind of like safe zone where you're free to fall, because and you have the freedom and the love and support. We'll help you bounce back up if you do fall, but fall, because it's important. Take risks and jump and fall. And I liked that concept.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me, now that you're expecting and looking forward to being a mom, do you think that that's changed the way you are writing, or the way you see your writing?
I think it's made me extra happy that I write to younger audiences. I'm excited for the inspo that I'll get from my child. And I think especially having a son, I'm extra happy to have written so much from like a female point of view. And I hope he reads books, some of my books one day, and gets to know more like different points of view, because I think that's a cool experience for a little boy. I think we were so like gendered in what we read growing up, like girls read girl stories, boys read boy stories. But I think it would be cool to read the other gender's point of view sometimes.
Sure. Yeah. I remember there's a classic books. There's two, I think, or maybe it was a series, but there's Little Men and Little Women. And I remember reading Little Women, and people, you know, my buddies are like, that's for girls. I'm like, it's a book.
Yeah. Like, I think that's fun. I hope that he gets to read all these books, and I hope he has a million different perspectives. I think it really makes me think about like all the books that made me fall in love with reading. Something special that we did for my mother-in-law had my baby shower for me, and she had, instead of cards, people gave me books, and they signed the books for the kids' nursery. And I was just setting it up and like going through all these notes, and you realize like books are just so important in a child's life. And there's people of all ages who wrote me these like really sweet and really sweet and sentimental notes about like, this was my favorite childhood book growing up. This is the book I read to my first kid, and like all of these special memories and like bonding experiences that are built around reading. And like, I'm really excited to be able to share those with my kid. And I'm excited and grateful that I get to, I know my books aren't necessarily the, like read to your kids books, but I hope some of my books can be those core memory books that teenagers and young girls find and first like are like, oh, reading is fun. It's not just like what I have to do for homework.
Yeah. Well, certainly we encourage families, if they're not going to be curled up on the couch reading your book aloud, we encourage families to co-read and have discussions. Before I ask you what kind of conversations you think families can have if they're co-reading Seeing Stars together, I'm curious, what book are you most looking forward to reading your son?
Oh my gosh, what book am I most looking forward to reading my son? I had never heard of this book, but one of my best childhood friends got me this book called Good Night, I Love You. And I just read it the other night. It is so sweet, and it has like a little light switch on the back, and the stars light up in the sky afterward. And she added to it and wrote the most special note in the back of it. Shout out to Shannon.
All right, Shannon.
But yeah, Shannon, she's a fantastic friend. And she, I think like, I don't know if I'll be able to get through it without crying, but that seems... like, that's a book that I'm really excited to read with him.
Crying while you're reading is acceptable. And I actually think it's healthy because, you know, here on the podcast, we talk a lot about kids and emotion and social-emotional learning. And I think to allow our kids to see us being moved, whether it's because we're reading something sad or something that makes us happy and we're crying because we're happy, I think it's okay. There was a book my kids loved called The Clown of God by Tommy DePaola that I could not get through ever. Yes. And I think they picked it sometimes.
To make you cry. My husband will be worse than me. He's the biggest crier. So he'll be demonstrating a lot of that.
So getting back to conversations we can have with our kids, what kind of conversations do you think a family can have on their way to school or soccer or ballet as they're co-reading Seeing Stars?
Oh my gosh, I think there's so many conversations. Well, first of all, Seeing Stars is a love triangle, but also there's a lot of like complicated parent-child relationships and sibling relationships in that book. And I think that makes for really interesting conversation, especially with your parent or with your siblings. Mona lost her parent, her dad died a few years prior, and she's very much in the thick of grieving. And her mom's idea of how to be there for her, I think toward the end, spoiler alert, there's like a moment of understanding. And I think that would be a really interesting thing for both parents and children to read together, to kind of like get a different point of view of, maybe I don't understand why my mom is doing something she's doing, or maybe I don't understand why my kid is acting out in the way that they are. So I think in that way, on a deeper level, it could be really fun. If you want just some fun, lighthearted dinner table conversation or whatever, I think it's always fun to be like, which guy are you rooting for? In a love triangle. I think that's fun. And just kind of like, who do you like the most in the book? There's so many fun characters on here. And like, I think whenever my book club, for example, what we love to do is kind of like cast which one of us is most like each character. I think that's a fun thing to do with your family too.
Cool. My beautiful wife just left for her book club.
Oh, I love a book club. I really do.
Yeah. Tell me, do you have a favorite character in the book, or is there a character that you are most like?
Oh my gosh. Well, I love them all so much. I think I have such a soft spot for Mary Machado, even though she's kind of like, in many ways, there's no villain in these books, but she can be the villain. She's just the most complicated character, and I think that's a really interesting person to play with and kind of just like add layers onto. You think she's one thing, and then you kind of like see these other sides of her. And you maybe don't talk about someone who like disappoints me sometimes, but like, I think when you know your characters so well, you can have this sort of empathy for them when they do make decisions that you don't necessarily agree with and understand like kind of like why she is who she is. So yeah, she's been across both books probably my favorite character, but like they really are all my favorites.
I'm curious, you mentioned earlier that your next book is going to be middle grade. And is that because the story called for it to be middle grade, or was this a challenge? Is this an audience that you would just wanted to write for?
Both a little bit, but like I felt this calling. I mean, I will continue to write YA. I love YA as well, but I really like that audience. I think it would be really fun to do something that feels a little bit younger. I think middle school is such an interesting time in life. You're in that kind of like in between phase where you're still a kid, but you're not quite like a little kid anymore. I feel like that's something that came through every time I was talking to these middle schoolers for research, of like that feeling of like you don't want to be like so kiddish, you don't want to be babyish, it's like so embarrassing. But you're not a high schooler yet either, you still are kind of a kid, and I think that like in between phase and how it oftentimes brings out the worst in us and like the most insecure, the most mean, the like this kind of just like trans, and not to mention like all the hormones that are coursing through you at that time in life. So I wanted to tap into that, and I think I was really inspired by like Judy Blume. Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret was my like probably first favorite book that I read that made me fall in love with reading. And I think something like I was like, I kind of want to do something like that. Something that's like a first book that a kid could find in like fifth or sixth grade that they really, really love and like makes them laugh and feel seen.
Awesome. Well, when that middle book is ready to debut, you are more than welcome to come back on the show to celebrate.
Thank you so much. I'd love to be back.
Let's tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Seeing Stars, Finding Famous, and find out more about you.
You can find my books pretty much anywhere books are sold. Dear local bookstore would be a great place to go support it. If they don't have it, tell them to please stock it. Most Barnes and Nobles will have them. Amazon, if that's what you're into, will deliver it for you next day. But you can just go on the Penguin Random House, and I think Disney has a page for it. I should be better at plugging my own book. My personal favorite bookstore, Book Passage in Marin County, you can buy it from them. I believe they have some signed copies in stock. But yeah, you can pretty much anywhere they sell books, they're gonna have some copies of both of those, and it would be so fun to read with your family.
Awesome. We've had a great time speaking to the author of Seeing Stars. It's the new YA title from our guest, Candace Jalili. Hey, Candace, thanks for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Thanks so much, Jed. This was fun.
This episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Princess Naomi Helps a Unicorn, a dance it out creative movement story for young movers. Unicorns and horses and snakes, oh my! Interactive movement wrapped up in a charming story of sibling angst, anger management, compassion, and triumph. Fed up with her annoying sister, Naomi storms out of the castle, only to discover a unicorn in need of help. With a sense of purpose, she quickly forgets her anger. Princess Naomi is just one of the many wonderful books you can find at onceuponadance.com. A mother and daughter duo with a passion for dance and storytelling. They strive to share joyful movement, honor the beauty and discipline of ballet, and foster freedom of expression. Check it out today, onceuponadance.com. This episode of Reading With Your Kids is brought to you by Trumpet, the Miracle Wolf Pup Series. There's a brand new book in the series, and we're so excited to tell you all about it. Trumpet Becomes a Mom. In this exciting book, Trumpet and Lighthawk, now a bonded pair, start their own family with their very first litter of pups. Families can read together, schools can explore the importance of wolf packs in conservation, and Trumpet fans everywhere can celebrate this milestone in her incredible journey. Grab your copy today, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, select bookstores, and the Wolf Conservation Center, where Trumpet and her family live. Plus, 50% of all profits go right back to supporting the Wolf Conservation Center, with more donated to Lighthawk Conservation Flying. So grab your book today and have a group haul for Trumpet and her family. Joining us from very cold and snowy Minnesota, our guest is here today to celebrate her adventures in the Friendly Forest devotional. Please welcome to the show, Amanda Josh. Josh. We've talked so much about mispronouncing her name. Amanda, thanks for being on Reading With Your Kids. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Jed. Thank you so much for having me. It's a joy to be here.
I'm delighted to have you on. Yeah, Amanda and I made the mistake of joking about her name beforehand. And of course, I should have known to take 2 minutes talking about something else before we jumped into the podcast.
It's all right. Like I said, over 90% of the time people pronounce it incorrectly. So I answer to pretty much anything.
Well, we want to know about Adventures in the Friendly Forest. This is a devotional. First, talk a little bit about what a devotional is, please.
Yeah, so a devotional is, it's a compilation of either, sometimes it's stories or it's of writing on specific topics that kind of fit into a broader theme. And what is interesting with this devotional, it's a little bit different from your more traditional devotionals that typically skew more toward nonfiction for the bulk of the writing, the more the story or essay portion, you might call it essay. But this devotional is a storybook devotional. So the stories are actually their fiction. So yeah, it's a little different from most. There are some out there, but there aren't too many. So it's kind of, yeah, fun spin on what a traditional devotional is.
So Adventures in the Friendly Forest wasn't written to necessarily be read from cover to cover in one setting. This is more of a something, hey, we'll do this every night at 7 or in the mornings. And
yes, yeah, the idea, it was written, yeah, to have it be more of, you could read, yeah, typically it's maybe one a day or a couple a day, because then each short, essentially you could call them chapters, these short chapters, it's a 30-day devotional. So it has 30 of these days or 30 chapters. They all fit into this bigger story, but each one of those days or chapters also has reflection questions and a think about it point and a short prayer to go along with it. But another fun thing is, if you don't want to do the devotional, the reflection questions, that portion of it, you could read it really just more as a chapter book, mm-hmm. and read through. So in that sense, you could read it, you know, within a day or a few days, where you're going to read like, all right, we'll read 5 to 10 of these, because they are quite short. Mm-hmm. So 5 to 10 of these chapters, and then read it more as a storybook.
So tell us, are there characters that run through all of the different stories?
Yes. So there is a fun little crew of 5 main characters. So it's 5 forest friends, and they are all animals, talking animals. So we have Blaze the bunny. We have Hensley the hedgehog. We have Who the Owl, Cubby the Bear, and Flora the Fox.
That's a fun collection of characters.
Yes, it was so much fun to dream up these characters and their little personalities. And I just love forest animals in general. I also enjoy doing art and illustration, so I love drawing them. I have always loved learning about animals. So it was fun to, again, just kind of dream up what these animals, what their little personalities would be and how they would interact with each other in the friendly forest and how they would navigate all the different challenges that come their way.
Yeah. You know, I'm a big believer that families that want to instill religious values in their kids, that reading with them is the best way to do that. And certainly, and I think you can do it with any book, sit down and read the story and like, so what do you think about what the different characters did? I did some faith formation with my daughter watching Jersey Shore, believe it or not.
I would love to hear more. No.
well, it was fun. I was involved in a media literacy class.
Yeah.
My daughter was in the eighth grade at the time, and the Catholic nun that was teaching the media literacy class surprised me one day because she said, don't ever try to ban something from your kids. Instead, experience it with them and then talk about it. And I thought, well, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard of, sister, but I thought I'd give it a shot because my daughter said, saw the commercials for Jersey Shore. She said, I got to watch that. And I'm like, all right, we'll watch it together. And we did, and we watched the first and episode, and I'm like, my eyes are getting big, and I'm like, I need to make sure I don't laugh at this inappropriate stuff in front of my eighth grade daughter.
Right.
But after the show, I said, so what did you think? Well, it was funny when he did this and this and this, and I go, so what do you think about the character? What do you think about Snooki? Oh, she has like absolutely no self-respect. A woman with respect would never let someone say this or that or do this to them, and I'm like, we might have something here. And so we would watch the series in that context of, this is funny and goofy, but is this what are these values that I want to have in my life?
Yeah. Are these things I want to emulate? And I actually, this is something that it sounds very similar to something I will encourage families to do with their kids, whether it's with, it could be with books, with reading, mm-hmm. but also with favorite TV shows or movies, because in everything we read, the characters sometimes make good decisions and sometimes make bad decisions, whether it's real life or reality TV, all of that. And then talk through, and I call it even a little game, like, let's play wise or not wise. And talking through these decisions the characters made, and sometimes it's maybe after the movie's over, after the show's over, or even throughout the book or movie, and pausing. And so, just like it sounds like what you were doing with your daughter. And like, do we want to act like Snooki in this instance? Like, what do you think? And then, and opening up a discussion about that. Because, when we just totally ban something and say, this is 100% off limits and not explain or anything, that can be really hard for kids and confused. And then you're not walking them through some of the things or explaining to them why maybe we believe this way or this or that way, and just helping them grow in character. So being along, by their side, walking them through it. And of course, using discretion with like the age and maybe, all of that. I think that is, can be a really helpful thing to do to walk alongside your kids, not just, do whatever you want, watch whatever you want, and we'll have no discussions or follow-up, but to walk beside them through that.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that the Sister Rose stressed is that the reality is you're not going to ban them. You can ban them from watching it in your house, but they're going to see it.
Right. Well, they'll watch it at a friend's house
or
watch it. Yeah. Like, I mean, I did stuff like that as a kid, things I wasn't allowed to watch, whether it was at a friend's house or I managed to like pull it up on the TV, as in the basement or whatever. Like, it's just, kids will find a way. And now with phones and all the technology, I mean, it's a challenging time to be raising kids. We have three kids as well. But also, just kind of recognizing what's in front of you and, yeah, and just yeah. walking your kids through that.
Yeah. And I love the question that you use, the words, is that a wise choice or not a wise choice? As opposed to saying, is that good or bad? Or is that right or wrong? That kind of judgy kind of thing. It's like, hey, what do you think? Was that smart? Did they make a wise choice there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it can lead to some good discussions, especially mm-hmm. if you're not agreeing on something like, well, why do you think that? And again, yeah, rather than to be so quick to label, mm-hmm. to label it as, yeah, as this was completely good or this was totally bad or this was, yes, like how let's talk through this and even understand like thinking through motivations and all the underlying stuff. And some of that, it doesn't come online with young kids as quickly, but I'm still starting to have those conversations early, I think can be very, very helpful and so great in building the relationship, building your relationship with your kids and showing them that, hey, I am a safe, approachable person that you can talk with and have conversations with. It doesn't mean, especially with young kids, it doesn't mean that we need to be their best friend in that sense and like everything's fine and whatever. But like we can have these conversations about confusing things or hard things and it's okay. And to not, as a parent, to not like freak out if your kids ask you some crazy question about something. You're like, whoa, where did this come from? But to just, yeah, take a breath and okay, here we go. Let's go and get into this.
Yeah. So do the five characters in Adventures in the Friendly Forest, they make any unwise choices?
Oh, they do. They do make some unwise choices. And yes, thankfully we learn from them. And so my hope is that kids will see that and they will learn along with them. Like one unwise choice, for example, that I can relate to, especially like from my growing up years, is Flora the Fox. She sees all these older foxes wearing these fashion fox hats. And what it is, so she's wearing this hat and it totally like covers her eyes. And so one, she looks very silly, but then she's running into things, like falling into stuff. And so yes, it's, she learns her lesson that way. That yeah, maybe, you know, following what seems cool or what everyone else is doing, like maybe that's not always the best choice, the best thing to do. Just because everyone else is doing it doesn't mean that I need to do it or doesn't mean that it's right for me. Like, so yeah, there's plenty of learning opportunities that yeah. the Forest Friends have. Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that this is a Christian devotional, but it sounds mm-hmm. like that's, you know, that lesson that the fox learned is certainly a lesson that transcends, you know, religious affiliation. That's something that we should be talking to all our kids about.
Yeah, I agree. And so many of the lessons that these Forest Friends are learning really, I do think, transcend like specific religious beliefs for the most part. I mean, they would fall into, I think, what all parents or teachers or people are wanting their kids to do and understand. So other topics include like learning to be patient, practicing mm-hmm. patience. Having grace for yourself over perfection, like demanding perfection, but saying, you know what, I'm not going to do everything perfectly. And it's okay to make mistakes. Like that's something I'm working on with my kids to learn that too. Like, and I've taught myself as well. Like I can tend toward wanting the perfect. It's like, no, part of learning is making mistakes and that's okay. Self-control, caring for the needs of others, kindness, honesty, telling the truth. So yes, lots of things, and really that could apply pretty much across the board. And the stories themselves are not partly because it's these fictional stories with these animal characters, but it's not extreme overtly Christian. Mm-hmm. The stories, the reflection questions and prayers are, mm-hmm. But the stories, the animals, so they will. Sometimes, not in every single chapter or day, they will refer to the maker, is what they call, was what they call God, the creator. They refer to him as the maker. So there are references to the maker. And then in the reflection questions, and then there's also a Bible verse to go with every day, but then it helps them connect what these forest friends are learning, that lesson, to the Christian faith. But again, the stories themselves, I think for people who are even just curious about the Christian faith or are wanting their kids to learn good, valuable lessons and grow in character is, it absolutely could apply or be helpful for families too.
Well, you know, one of the things, again, going back to Sister Rose and that media literacy class, now, I took this class, let's see, my daughter's probably 17 years ago. And at that time, this is before social media blew up. It was before we walked around with a computer in our pockets and streaming services and all that. And at that time, it was thought that kids are exposed to like 3,000 media messages a day. I'm guessing that number is probably 100 times 3,000. Again, one of the things we learn is that every media, every piece of media we consume, it was created intentionally by somebody who wants you to buy something, feel something, or do something. And I think, as parents, we need to teach our kids that. But also as parents, I think it's important for us to curate what media am I going to introduce my kids to so that I'm sharing the values that I think is important. And I'm not sitting back and just letting somebody on social media teach values to my kids.
Right. I totally agree with that. And yeah, we haven't entered the social media world yet with our kids. Our oldest is 9, so we haven't done phones or anything like that yet, but I know all those conversations. I mean, there has been the, when do I get to get a phone? Those kinds of conversations or questions, and we haven't set a definitive age yet. We've been able to get away with the, not for a while, not till you're older, and so I'm sure sooner than later we're going to get, okay, when, what age, and that kind of a thing. But yeah, it's a lot. Again, it's a lot to navigate. Absolutely. Sure. So I'm so grateful for my friends and people around us in our community that have kids a little bit older than us and that can help teach me. It's like, hey, like teach me. I know. I mean, I already make mistakes in parenting, right? We're going to make mistakes. Like, so I'll make my own mistakes too, but can teach me like through their own mistakes or things that they've done that have worked well. I'm already asking questions to all my friends, and obviously none of them have it completely figured out because none of us do, but we're learning together, and yeah, that's the beauty of community though as well. Yeah,
absolutely. what was there one thing that inspired you to create Adventures in the Friendly Forest?
Well, so the overarching theme in the book, and it's not pushed in every story totally, but there's an overarching theme of helping kids handle and process change. Mm. And how do they handle change well? So essentially, so the beginning of the story, and this isn't too much of a giveaway or anything because it's the first day, it's day one. But on day one, a big, big storm blows through the Friendly Forest and changes a whole lot about what is happening around these forest friends. And so then throughout the story, you see them learning and growing and watching them have to band together, which also can bring about some conflicts and things, but band together to come together to try to save the friendly forest before winter so they don't have to leave their home. So the overarching, and actually, so this devotional is based on a free resource that I used to, offer. I think it's still available, through my website, but, several years ago, I created a short 5-day free resource for mainly at that point, it was friends and family and things, since I used to work in, kids curriculum development and still love to do that. So created this resource and it was called Change It Up. And so, but it was this idea of this, it had the very, very, in that resource, they're very short little stories, just like a paragraph or two about things that these forest friends encountered after the storm came and how they learned through it and grew through it. And that's something I think, I mean, we all still as adults, we face change all the time. Like that is a guarantee in life. There's going to be change. And kids, whether, so like some of the changes that they face is of course, like just the whole environment around them, but all of a sudden feeling a lot of fear. What do I do with that? What do I do with this new thing, this scary thing happened, feeling fear? How do I handle that? How can I choose faith over fear? Also, like one of the characters has to move because his house was destroyed in the storm. Who has to move to a new tree and has a really hard time with that? So that is, again, kind of an overarching. So that's really sort of what inspired this whole devotional was how can we help kids handle change well and in a way that honors God in a way that helps them grow in character. And because yeah, we can handle change one of two ways, or I mean, one of many ways, but yeah, we can either like dig our heels in and, or, you know, just get really grumpy and all that. And we see some of that in this storybook, or we can say to move forward and say, okay, here's what I have here. Here are these options. How can I make some wise choices here, show kindness, all of that amidst this change, whether good change or not as good of change. So yeah, so that was the main inspiration.
I love it. You know, as you were talking about, you know, helping kids go through change, I think lots of kids experience change, also experience loss, disappointment. I know a lot of parents, I don't think it's happening as much as it used to, but I know there was a period that we went through where parents were wrapping their kids up in bubble wrap so that they didn't get a bump or a bruise or experience a loss or a disappointment. And that's a real disservice to our kids. And I think an experience like Adventures in the Friendly Forest, where we see characters deal with change and disappointment and scary things, can really help our kids develop the kind of calluses they need to be successful and happy in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I hope so.
We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Adventures in the Friendly Forest and find out more about all the different things that you've created.
Yeah, so thank you. People can go to, they can go to my website directly if they want. It's Amanda K, just the one letter K, Joss, that's JASS.com. And then I do have a specific page with my books on there. And so you can learn more about Adventures in the Friendly Forest on there. And also, if people are interested, and I have lots of free resources, so some free devotionals and things for kids and families to use together as well. So there's the people can just subscribe to my email list on there to get those. And also, though, Adventures in the Friendly Forest, it is available. It's available on kind of most of the major online retailers. And so I don't know when this airs, but pre-order or order when that's available.
We've had a great time speaking to the author of Adventures in the Friendly Forest. It's a wonderful devotional for your family. Our guest has been Amanda Joss. Amanda, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Jed. Appreciate it.
We are so glad that you decided to spend part of your day here with us at Reading with Your Kids. This episode made you smile or gave you something to think about. Pass it on. Share the link with someone you love, leave a 5-star review and hit that subscribe button so you can join us for the next exciting episode of the show. If you haven't already done so, please check out readingwithyourkids.com. It is the hub for all things reading with your kids, including finding out how you can be a guest on the show. Being a guest is fun, it's easy, and it gives you the chance to tell thousands of Kidlit fans all over the world about your fantastic children's book. Want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our guest, Candace Jalili. Please be sure to check out Seeing Stars. Finding Famous was her, the original. Seeing Stars is a spinoff, and that's the book we want you to check. And yeah, we want you to check out Finding Famous, too. We also want to thank Amanda Just. Please be sure to check out Adventures in the Friendly Forest. I want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Chris Stardy. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the love and support she brings into my life. Most of all, we want to thank you. You are shaping a kinder, smarter, more empathetic world every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you on the next episode of Reading with Your Kids. What?